the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Is Bitcoin a technology or a money? That's an interesting question. There are people who consider it a type of money for rogues and criminals. That's a silly view, but it has more than a few adherents, particularly amongst politicians. Or at least that was the view until a few weeks ago. As the Trump administration took over the U.S. White House, a new crypto-friendly regulatory regime seems to be on the cards. The previous Securities and Exchange Commission launched more than 100 court cases against different crypto platforms, including Binance and XRP. Now, there's euphoria in the crypto community that most of these cases will probably disappear under the new SEC regime, and that a more sensible approach to regulation will take root and put to bed questions as to whether Bitcoin is inherently good or bad. In other words, regulators are starting to see Bitcoin as an infrastructure layer with potentially huge benefits for mankind. While Bitcoin hovers around the $100,000 mark, we've had a few bizarre weeks where meme coins launched by Donald and Melania Trump, perhaps inspired by Elon Musk's support for Doge, seem to take fire and then fizzle out again. So there's a lot going on in the crypto market. To discuss all of this, we're joined by Rob Price, CIO, that's Chief Investment Officer and founder of Sound Money. Hi, Rob. It's good to talk to you again. You recently wrote an article exploring the persistent belief in some quarters that Bitcoin and crypto generally facilitate crime. But the stats don't really bear that out, do they? Take us through what the stats do tell us and summarize the arguments in your recent article.
Thanks, Kieran. Always good to be here with you. Yeah, I mean, I think you've summed it up pretty well in your introduction. I think the changes from a regulatory perspective in the crypto sphere have been absolutely profound over recent months. A raft of them. I'll keep it short, but changes at the SEC, the Treasury, the FDIC, the CFTC. The SEC has rescinded, SAB 121. That means we're probably going to see U.S. banks entering into the crypto space over the coming years. Maybe this year we'll see. It's still to be confirmed, but big changes. A digital asset working group, people focused on Bitcoin and crypto within the administration. I could go on, but at the same time, we have seen these meme coin launches by the president. I don't think they're the most important thing by any stretch of the imagination, but I just thought this was a good opportunity to tackle this question, hit the nail on the head, because I still get a number of questions from skeptics when they, as you said, they're still kind of proponents of this narrative that crypto is used by criminals. And I think this is a major misconception, and I think it's just a good opportunity to dive into a few of those details. And I think the starting point is that Bitcoin, crypto, it's a technology. The actual users of the technology is somewhat irrelevant, not entirely relevant. It's obviously of interest, but if you compare it to other technologies, they are like something like the internet. The internet is a neutral protocol, a piece of infrastructure that people use on a day-to-day basis. And actually, Bitcoin is very much the same. And it's quite interesting how in the early days of the internet, there were a number of negative reports about its usage. Even something like Time magazine in the early 1990s was publishing articles arguing that the internet was significantly dominated by the pornography industry. There was definitely errors in that research, and obviously we've seen over time that anything like that is fully faded into the background. People use the internet as this neutral protocol, and it's a very powerful piece of technology, and that obviously can be used for good and for bad. We can't discount the potential for bad to happen on the network. But the reality is it's a very powerful piece of infrastructure. And I think we'll see very much the same trend with Bitcoin. Already, I think that we do get less questions about the criminal activity. But as I said, it still surprises me how frequently they do come out. So good time to hit that nail on the head.
Yeah, I mean, clearly you see a problem with this Bitcoin equals crime argument. But who is making that argument? I thought that died down several years ago. What evidence have you come across the people still believing that?
Well, I mean, it's from my interaction with people. I mean, it probably is skeptics. It's definitely not the you know, every single individual. I think most people see a very powerful trend in place here, but there are still certain skeptics. And I mean, this is slightly tangential, but another thing that does interest me is that it's important to bear in mind that there are a lot of vested interest still in seeing something like Bitcoin not succeed. There's all sorts of people who don't benefit from the adoption of new technologies. People in existing entrenched industries, banking industry. Some people in government, and even potentially people, in finance and investment. It's it can be quite challenging when you see this whole new financial industry arise, and that's not really in your sphere. You don't your economic worldview doesn't align with that one. It doesn't allow you with the framework to understand it properly. You see lots of people making money quite quickly, and that can irk a number of people. So anyway, they are vested interests, and still those people might be the ones that are espousing these erroneous arguments.
All right. There has been some research done by Chainalysis on the crime stats involving Bitcoin and crypto. Maybe just take us through what the evidence is in terms of Bitcoin and crime specifically.
Yeah, so Chainalysis is a very credible institution. I think also important to note that while obviously they work in the crypto industry, so they are proponents of the technology, but they also, their biggest client is government. So, the point I'm making is they're not your type of crypto bros that are just saying everything positive about crypto just for the sake of it. They're doing, extensive data analysis. And as I said, often providing that information to government. And they do this data analysis suggests that 0.14% of total on-chain transaction volume in crypto is related to illicit activity. And that encompasses a range of unlawful actions, from darknet market transactions, ransomware payments, sanctions evasions, and even including frauds and scams. And that's an incredibly low figure. And I think maybe as an addition to that, it's useful to note that, as I mentioned, governments often use the data from Chainalysis to investigate crimes in, maybe not even crimes in crypto, but crimes that have used crypto as a payment rail. So, as a very well-known example, Silk Road was a dark net, market for trading in illicit substances on the internet, and people used Bitcoin in the very early days. And I think there was a misconception in those very early days that Bitcoin was anonymous and therefore would be a good technology to use. But actually, the reality is not the case. Bitcoin is a pseudonymous technology, and so it actually makes it very, very easy for law enforcement to track. So on the Bitcoin blockchain, just getting into a little bit of detail here, you can't see people's names on that blockchain, but what you can see is all the transactions and all the addresses. So all it takes is for an individual to use Bitcoin and then have used another centralized service as a rail on the other end, using a centralized exchange as an example, and they've given their information over to that exchange. That allows law enforcement, through often the use of, as I said, providers like Chainalysis, to be able to identify. And that's exactly what happened with Silk Road, where you saw government actually use the tool of Bitcoin to be able to track down people who had committed crime.
Yeah, you mentioned Silk Road, and quite interesting that the founder of Silk Road was Ross Ulbricht. He was just pardoned by Donald Trump. I think one of the first acts or one of the first pardons that he issued when he came into power. Now, the focus on crypto as a facilitator of crime, I guess an equally persuasive argument can and should be made that traditional finance is a far greater tool for criminals. The stats you just gave from Chainalysis, a tiny percentage of Bitcoin transactions involved in crime. What about traditional finance? How does that feature in the whole picture?
Well, for sure. Exactly. It's a great point to make. I mean, the US dollar, for example, before even going into the banking industry, I mean, the US dollar is far more prevalently used in crime than Bitcoin. And that doesn't say that the US dollar itself is necessarily evil. That's just saying that people find it as a useful technology to execute with, it's very globally known. It is this global medium of exchange, and therefore it's more likely to be used. But as you've mentioned, also, you know, it's fascinating that this negative narrative can still exist in the Bitcoin crypto industry. And it potentially comes back to the points I've mentioned earlier about vested interest. But yeah, if you look at the existing financial players, global banking, there's been numerous frauds over the years, numerous scams, and those often come right from the inside of those organizations. That's not them unknowingly knowing about it. That's actually them participating. So, you know, examples like fraudulent mortgage practices in 2008, you know, the Wells Fargo, there was a fake account scandal in 2010. Deutsche Bank, they served known sex offender Jeffrey Epstein after knowing that he was a sex offender. HSBC have allowed Mexican cartels to launder billions of dollars. And of course, there was the LIBOR manipulation scandal that came to a head in 2015. So numerous scandals in the existing industry. And as I said, those are actually, some of them were actually perpetrated from inside those organizations. Yet, of course, they have the marketing budget to be able to kind of overcome that. And the public doesn't perhaps realize the sinister elements that can sometimes take place within the existing banking industry.
All right. Are you excited by the new SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission regime? Trump has pretty much swept the boards, I think, and he's cleaned out a lot of the old people. The SEC was very hostile towards crypto. I mentioned in the beginning that they launched 100 cases against various different crypto platforms. What kind of regulatory shifts do you expect from this new regime?
Yeah, I mean, it's, as I said at the top, it's absolutely profound. It cannot actually be overstated how significant for crypto this change in administration has been. Changes at the SEC, changes at the Treasury, changes at the FDIC, changes at the CFTC. These are all the major arms of government that are touching on finance, monetary policy, and in terms of what we should expect. Well, I mean, I think the first point to note is just how negative the administration was previously. The Biden administration was negative to a point of being discriminatory, I think. And in fact, I think the courts have proved that out. The U.S. courts, I mean, many of these, I mean, this SEC was taken to court and was their hand was forced to approve the Bitcoin ETFs earlier last year. And that just kind of shows that when things actually come before the courts, they disagreed with the policy that was being implemented by the Biden administration at the top of these organizations. So yeah, to see a change is absolutely significant. In terms of what we're expecting, well, I mean, I think that things like actually clear regulation of crypto from the SEC, things like, what is a security, what is not a security, and to have a clear policy about and then who is, who is regulating what. If something is a security, then of course the SEC will be overseeing it. If it's not a security, then it's going to be overseen by the CFTC. We should expect more clarity on market structure. Market structure implies, what are the rules and regulations for all of the institutions that are custodying crypto assets. And I'm also expecting some sort of stable coin regulation over the coming years. I think that's an absolute no-brainer for the U.S. It doesn't make sense, in my opinion, for them to go down the CBDC route, the central bank digital currency route. It makes more sense for them to leverage off the private stablecoin industry that already is powerful, that already is innovative. It already is dominated by the U.S. dollar. I mean, we know that the U.S. dollar dominates global currency flows. But actually in the stablecoin space, the US dollar is far, far, far more dominant. And so that implies from the US government perspective, it is another tool which advances the global reserve currency status of the dollar. And also these fully reserve backed stablecoins are another buyer of US government debt. So all around, it makes a lot of sense for them to support stable coins. And therefore, we're probably going to see US banks moving into the crypto industry over the coming quarters. A lot of changes afoot. And obviously, one that catches the headlines probably the most is this strategic Bitcoin reserve, which of course, is a possibility. I mean, it's definitely something that's being spoken about. I'm actually a little bit more skeptical that we're going to see that executed over the short term. But yeah, maybe that's a topic for another conversation.
Maybe just explain what is a strategic Bitcoin reserve?
Yeah, so the idea being that, governments and treasury departments, they do hold assets in reserve. Predominantly, the assets that are held in reserve are government debt, bonds, and the U.S. Treasury bonds will be held, for instance, by the South African government as a reserve. And they also might hold assets like gold. And so the idea being that, Bitcoin as an alternative money, a counterparty free asset, potentially a reserve asset of the world. I do think it fits that framework. And I do think that we will move into a world in the future where governments are holding Bitcoin as a reserve asset. And so the idea has been floated by some in the Trump administration and others in government that the US government should be should be considering moving in that direction over the short term. The reason why I kind of hold a bit more of a nuanced opinion here, because as just to repeat, I do think we will move in that direction. And I think for many countries, that is a viable road to walk down. But I'm skeptical whether the US as the global reserve currency, whether it makes sense for them to execute it in the short term, because I wonder what the market reaction will be like given they have the status as the global reserve currency. What will the market think? Will the market think that the U.S. government is now kind of actually shifting from treasuries to Bitcoin? I think that is potentially a risk that they won't want to they won't want to bring to the surface. Perhaps yes, they implement a policy where they say we already hold a lot of Bitcoin. The U.S. government does hold a lot of Bitcoin. A significant portion of that is because of the Silk Road confiscations that we kind of referred to earlier in the conversation. And over time, they have been selling down on that exposure. So maybe they do pass legislation to put a moratorium on sales and they hold the existing holdings. But I'm skeptical whether they're going to actually use treasury financing to purchase more crypto assets over the short term, as I said, because of potentially the market response. And also, I do think from a narrative perspective, I wouldn't be surprised if the media machine will not take that type of policy lightly, because from their perspective, what they're going to argue that they're seeing is a kind of a wealth transfer from US taxpayers towards wealthy Bitcoin holders. Now, that's not exactly the way that I actually would see it, but I think that that narrative will catch like wildfire in the media, and I don't think it will be seen very favorably. So anyway, I'm skeptical whether that reserve will actually be executed in the short term, particularly in the United States.
All right, let's talk about meme coins. What do you make of the recent meme coin issues made by Donald Trump and his wife, Melania? And maybe just explain, what is a meme coin?
Yeah, well, maybe even starting before a meme coin, a meme is a narrative, an idea, and a narrative that kind of catches interest, and we, you know, a lot of people talking about that meme, and maybe it's even, you know, turns into a phrase that we just kind of use, and that phrase kind of articulates that idea or that narrative. And a meme coin is a coin that is being created basically just with that meme as its central component. And so, you know, for example, you know, you launch a coin, it's called Trump coin, but the coin is not trying to really do anything. It's just issuing tokens and putting them onto exchange so that people can trade them. Now, you know, of course, I'll try and give it the balanced argument that there can be some reason for a meme coin. Maybe the narrative has, you know, cultural significance. So, for example, a very famous meme coin is Dogecoin. Dogecoin was one of the early meme coins that was created. And listen, I'm still skeptical about this argument that there's cultural value, but I guess I can see some reason for that. But in reality, you know, most of these meme coins are cash grabs. So it's people who are, you know, they're issuing the token. They, of course, hold a significant portion of the supply because it's been centralized, you know, issues. Like I could go and launch a meme coin, Robcoin, and I hold the supply. Then I use some capital to market it, to try and create a narrative to encourage people to buy it. The price goes up. I, of course, sell some of my early holdings so that I, you know, get capital in my back pocket. And then often what ends up happening is that all these unsuspecting retail participants are holding an asset, which then fall significantly. And that's what happens with, you know, 99% of meme coins. So, you know, I guess that's the background, you know, speaking specifically about Trump, this highlights to me the balance that we just need to be aware of. So clearly, I'm very positive about the regulatory changes that have been implemented by the Trump administration, particularly when we're talking about crypto specifically. But we also have to be aware that this administration is certainly not perfect. Trump is a divisive character. He does like to make some money, you know, for himself whenever possible. And then he's shown that by launching these meme coins. These are not adding any clear fundamental value to the market. This is a cash grab. And in terms of what that means for policy, we should just be aware that while, once again, I think it's very positive net policy, but we should expect all sorts of potentially less valuable, less constructive, and potentially even problematic projects to kind of just flood through the gates of the administration, because they just might not be paying attention to, and they might not be, you know, being as prudent as we would like them to be.
All right, final question, Rob. Talk about the issue of Bitcoin as a technology. Is it money? Is it technology? Is it both? How do you position it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, and it is a difficult question, because I mean, Bitcoin is a form of money. It does, it facilitates trade. It facilitates payment. It allows people to save. It allows people to send capital to anyone and receive capital from anyone at any place in the world at any time of day. So that is a form of money. It has its weaknesses, and you know, we won't get into those now, but of course it does. But yes, it also is a technology. It's a different lens through which to use it, and it is a technology to be able to do the things that I've mentioned. And I said, I think, you know, coming back to what we said at the start of the conversation, viewing it relative to other technologies like the internet is a very, very useful lens. And in terms of the adoption cycle, you know, Bitcoin, crypto, it fits that of the internet. Incredibly fast adoption, because these are very powerful technologies, severely misunderstood in their early days. Negative narratives have been created about both of them, But I think over time, what we'll see is that, you know, Bitcoin, like the internet, is a tool for freedom, is used by millions, billions of people around the world, millions at the moment, soon to be billions, and used for freedom, for ways that truly add value to their lives, empower them. And obviously we don't have the time to go into all those details, but you know, if you've got any questions, you let me know, because there are many examples of people using the technology for really socially good outcomes. And what's so frustrating about these criminal narratives, the meme coin narratives, is that it blinds people from the real positive impact that's taking place below the surface.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think in South Africa, there are a lot of pretty good examples of Bitcoin doing exactly what you say. For example, there are these Bitcoin circular economies that have started to sprout all around the country, particularly around the coast, down in Meisner and places like that. Is this what you are seeing yourself?
100%, exactly. I mean, I went to go and visit Bitcoin Akasi in Mossel Bay late last year, and I couldn't recommend it highly enough. If you're in Mossel Bay, if you're in the area, if you're in George, if you're driving past, I would recommend to go and spend some time there with that community. They're doing really powerful things, uplifting, you know, children, but not even just children. It's really heartwarming. It gives me goosebumps to think about it. And there are many of those type of examples, you know, around the world, where people are using the technology to learn about finance, to learn about saving. And that's a really powerful and wonderful thing.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. That was Rob Price, Chief Investment Officer of Sound Money. Thanks very much for joining us, Rob, on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast.
Thank you, Kieran.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.